They always look out for each other. And for you, too. They're your eyes. They show you the world. Take good care of them. For your best eyes for life, visit preventblindness.org/besteyes.
Live from the Liberty University studio in Memphis, Tennessee, it's Common Sense Conservative Commentary from Todd Starnes.
That's us, that's right, I love this American ride.
All right, hello everybody, welcome to the Todd Starnes radio program. Very happy to have you with us today. We have a lot of great stories to share with you, and I suspect we're going to be generating a lot of conversation as well. By the way, you folks in Georgia, some exciting news for all of you fine folks. Apparently, your governor now calling a special session to redistrict in the state of Georgia. Curious to hear your thoughts on what the governor there, Brian Kemp, is going to do. You folks in Mississippi, it is not going to happen now. Tate Reeves backing away from plans to recall the state legislature so they can get all of that going as well. So we'll keep you updated on all of that information. We'll be checking in just a little while with one of our great political strategists, Luke Symbol. Also, Indiana Congresswoman Erin Hochin is going to be joining us to talk about gas prices. And Congressman Marlon Stutzman is going to drop by in just a little while. And he's going to talk about this crazy story that happened yesterday up on Capitol Hill. I'll give you a preview of that in just a matter of moments. But I want to start today with the outrage. And believe it or not, there is a lot of outrage among people who are getting food stamps, the EBT cards. And we're talking about billions and billions of your tax dollars that are going to feed people, that are going to housing them and taking care of their health care. And the reality is most of these people are capable of doing this on their own. There's really no reason why these folks need food stamps other than the fact that they're just lazy. Now, there are some folks out there who do need that help from the government. And I don't begrudge those folks at all. Whether they be elderly or disabled or for whatever reason they cannot work, well, that's the whole point of having this handout from the government, which is the taxpayers of America. But when you've got young people in their 20s and 30s that are pulling down food stamps, it's just a big problem, a big problem. And we've got to do something about it. And fortunately, that's exactly what the administration is doing. As a matter of fact, J.D. Vance announced yesterday that 186,000 dead people are actually getting food stamps. Now, he's going to explain what that really means, but again, it's talking about the level of fraud within the food stamps. Cut 41, please.
186,000 dead Americans, to your knowledge, are receiving food stamps. Are you confident that you can get that number down to zero?
Well, I want to be clear. I don't actually think 186,000 dead Americans are receiving food stamps, because that would be impossible. I don't think that we have 186,000 ghosts walking into the grocery store and achieving benefits. I think that we have people who are claiming that they are getting food stamp benefits. They're using the identity of a dead person. So it's very much a living person. It's a living fraudster who's stealing the identity of a dead American. I just want to be very clear about that. But look, we know this is happening. We think that it's costing the American people hundreds of billions of dollars. By the way, another hidden cost of fraud is that it drives up the cost of goods for everybody. Because if you've got hundreds of billions of dollars chasing food that is going to dead Americans, living fraudsters, that's going to raise costs for everybody. So it actually is one of these things that has multiple victims, including the fact that it's driving up the cost of good for other Americans.
Yeah, well, it is driving up the cost for just about all of us. Now, a while back on this program, I actually recommended to the administration, they just need to pull the plug on everybody and make everybody reapply so that we could finally figure out who's supposed to be getting it and who is not. And the good news, ladies and gentlemen, I tell you that people listen to this show in Washington, D.C. That's exactly what the Trump administration has announced they're going to do. Take a listen to Cut 35.
Now says that everyone who's on SNAP is going to have to reapply. Now, this happened, of course, when the government shut down and there was, you know, this the SNAP benefits were in not getting out to the people.
For 42 million Americans.
For 42 million. Well, we
people
thought Americans.
Inside the country.
People is probably the better. Yep. People. And so Brooke Rollins, we had her on and we had a great conversation with her where she said, hey, listen, this whole SNAP benefits conversation around the shutdown has sort of pulled the curtain back, and people are seeing how many people are on SNAP that aren't actually citizens, and they're going to have to reapply.
So we did a little bit of research here to let you know exactly how many non-citizens, we call those folks illegals, are getting SNAP benefits. And we're talking, and by the way, that covers not just the food, but health care, the whole nine yards, housing. You, ladies and gentlemen, the kind-hearted, the generous, good Samaritans of America, you right now are footing the bill for about 1.5 million illegals that we know of. I think that number is a whole heck of a lot higher, but that's the actual confirmed number. And those folks are getting about $15 billion in SNAP benefits. And California is one of the most egregious of those. So I'm curious, how do you like this idea that the administration is going to proceed with, which is they're going to make everybody reapply? That's the only way that just, in other words, just zero out the EBT program, the SNAP benefits program, and make everybody do it all over again. Is that gonna completely eliminate all of the fraud? Probably not, but it's going to get a lot of it, a lot of it. So meanwhile, I want you to listen to this woman. They're also going to require at least 80 hours of monthly work. Good Lord, we do that in 2 days here on this show. But 80 hours a month, that's all you got to work, 80 hours a month to qualify. And even then, they're saying, no, that is not right. Cut 40.
I don't think it's fair that he do that. But
and you were saying you think it's going to hurt a lot of people?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely it's going to hurt a lot of people. Because you never know. You know what? Especially now that we are in the holidays and everybody wants to have a good dinner and everything. And if you don't give it to them, it's going to be really hard.
And, of course, they're also now cutting out all of the junk food and all of that sort of stuff. And, I'm glad to see that. But this mom says, hey, wait a second. What's the whole point of this if we're not allowed to buy, like, Cheetos and Doritos and strawberry drinks? What's going on there? Take a listen.
It's not even cool. Like, why they do that? What's the point of food stamps if it's just for real food?
Hannah Moore believes she and other SNAP recipients should be able to go into the grocery store and buy whatever they like. Soda, candy, prepackaged sweets, prepared desserts, and juice with less than half of natural fruit or vegetable juice in it will not be allowed to be purchased on SNAP cards.
I don't know what Trump is doing. I don't know what's going on.
Well, he's trying to make you healthy, man. Have you noticed, and I just an observation, but a lot of these folks who say, well, you know, they're starving to death and they don't want to work are all morbidly obese. Anybody else notice that? Is that just a coincidence? So anyway, I'm just curious, what do you think about the administration saying, you know what, we're going to crack down on all of the fraud, the waste, and the abuse? Here's the vice president again from yesterday, cut 37.
So we're looking into this stuff, but I can't commit to it because unlike the last administration, we tend to only prosecute people when they've actually violated the law, not just because they have the wrong political affiliation.
Sir,
yeah, go ahead.
Dead Americans on food stamps.
I'll do this again. Dead Americans on food stamps, you mentioned the other day, 186,000 dead Americans, to your knowledge, are receiving food stamps. Are you confident that you can get that number down to zero?
Well, I want to be clear, I don't actually think 186,000 dead Americans are receiving food stamps because that would be impossible. I don't think that we have 186,000 ghosts walking into the grocery store and achieving benefits. I think that we have people who are claiming that they are getting food stamp benefits. They're using the identity of a dead person. So it's very much a living person. It's a living fraudster who's stealing the identity of a dead American. I just want to be very clear about that.
Okay, but good. We're done with the VP there. I want to go through some of these headlines that are these in the past 24 hours. NBC News, the family's going hungry because of Trump's food stamp cuts. Alabama, 50,000 people dropped from Alabama SNAP rolls. Children and seniors are the ones who are suffering. North Carolina residents to go hungry. Counties to pay more for SNAP under federal changes. So you sort of see how the media narrative is going to play out here. The Associated Press saying 4.3 million people are no longer going to be receiving food stamps. And the reason why is those people are able to go and work. But they don't want to work because that's laziness. Laziness, ladies and gentlemen. All right, 901-260-5926, our telephone number. That's 901-260-5926. This is the Todd Stern Show.
Now at McDonald's, a sausage McMuffin is only $1.50. So stop dreaming about breakfast sausage and go get it. Get more value on the under $3 menu.
Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher for delivery.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. This is the Todd Stearns Radio Show. It used to drive me bonkers, and I would see this. You know, you hear these apocryphal stories about, you know, the folks with the ribeye steaks, and they're paying for all of it with the EBT cards, and I get that. You know, I guess if you can do it, you're going to do it. But the reality is the whole point of those cards and the whole point of the SNAP benefits program is to help you survive over a rough patch. And look, I remember in the 1980s when the oil industry collapsed, my dad's job required he relied on the oil industry for work, and work dried up. This was when Dad got transferred down to Louisiana. And there was some time where for dinner you would have red beans and rice and cornbread. And that's just the way you did it. You made do with what you had. And if you didn't have a lot of money, you weren't going out to eat, even at McDonald's or eating a ribeye steak. You know, that was a time in American society, I think, when most people understood that you have to live within your means, and that if you do need a handout from the government, you should not be taking advantage of that handout from the government. Let's go to the phones here, 901-260-5926. Let's start today in Hendersonville, North Carolina. Pam is listening to us on WHKP. Hi, Pam. What's on your mind today?
Good afternoon, Todd. Calling in regards to the SNAP benefit. Exactly. Everybody reapply because there's so much nonsense. Prime example, worked as a cashier at a local grocery store. I'm a mom with a husband and a 14-year-old boy. I'm working three jobs. My husband's working full-time. They come in. Had a woman that had a heaping bag of groceries, $500 worth of groceries, crab legs, steaks, I mean, stuff that I couldn't afford. And they bought cotton candy for the children. Well, it rung up under a different department as non-food. This woman come unglued over $4.50 because she had to pay that.
So she was upset because she had to pay just $4.
Exactly.
Oh my gosh.
Exactly.
Pam, I'm just wondering, here you are having to work all these jobs and you're paying your bills, you're doing everything right. How does that make you feel as an American watching somebody grift off of your hard-earned money?
Livid. Livid. I mean, it's a wonder I had a tip on the end of my tongue because as a cashier, you can't say anything. And it prints, in North Carolina, it prints the balance of what's left on their card after they buy something. And this woman had $2,000 left on her card.
It's shocking. And I think, again, as people are, and the media is not going to cover this story as well as they should, but now a lot of these people, Pam, are going onto like social media platforms, TikTok especially, and they're boasting about all this. They're bragging about all the loot they were able to get off of the EBT card. And then they talk about flashing around their own money. So they didn't have to spend any of their money. So they're stealing your money so they can buy all this crap.
So I could drive a high-end vehicle if I didn't have to buy groceries.
Well, that's true, especially these days. But trust me, you don't want a gas guzzler. Trust me on that, Pam.
No, I don't.
All right. Well, Pam, look, I appreciate you phoning in. And again, I thought for a long time, I thought, well, those stories can't be true. But I saw it for myself once, and now all of these stories are popping up, and these people are, they have no shame. I mean, don't get me wrong here. There used to be a point where if you had to go on food stamps, it wasn't exactly something you were throwing a parade in the neighborhood for, right? You didn't want people to know because it was embarrassing. But sometimes you got to do it. Sometimes you just have to have help. But these people don't need help at all. Let's go to Jeff in New Bern, North Carolina, the talk station. Hi, Jeff. What's on your mind?
Todd, I'm a fan of the show. We've spoke several times. I almost always agree with you. But let me mention the story of a young lady who has three children, works very hard, has a good job, recently lost her husband. She's embarrassed over food stamps, especially with gas now. She's having to make choices between gas and food to feed three children from no fault of her own, and you and your Christian wisdom have just called her fat and lazy.
Now, Jeff, I'm going to call you out on this because clearly you were not listening to the opening remarks of this program where I said very directly that there are some people who do need assistance from the government. I really don't appreciate you twisting my words and accusing this woman of being fat and lazy. So, Jeff, why don't you try getting your facts straight before you come on and make some sort of an accusation like that?
Todd, it's not an accusation. I heard your comment.
It is an accusation, Jeff. I specifically said there was a carve-out here that not everybody is like that.
But when you get rid of assistance and you make everybody start over who's embarrassed enough, Todd, and who hears comments like you make, like people look at her already, like, why do you get it and I don't? It's not fair to be so upfront, especially with the money we waste and give away in this country. Why don't we attack some of that debt, some of that giveaway, some of the $1 billion leaving the country before we worry about making people once again prove that their situation has put them in life that they need help from, that they would rather not be embarrassed.
We've got billions of dollars. Billions of dollars is being squandered. Billions of dollars is being stolen from the American taxpayers. So, again, if in fact this person's story that you just shared is authentic and legitimate, then she would have no problem qualifying for those benefits. But most of the people that are getting these benefits, as we are now discovering, they're perfectly capable of going out there and finding work and making a living for themselves, but they don't want to do that.
Oh, no, and she does, but when she hears comments like you have, she's already embarrassed enough at having to present the card.
Well, the only reason she ought to be embarrassed is if she's pulling a scam on the American taxpayers. Otherwise, she's perfectly qualified. I don't have a problem with that.
Lazy. They should go get a job was exactly your comment.
Exactly. They are. You don't think they are, Jeff?
Does.
All these people that are out there, you don't think they're lazy, the people that could go and work and get a job and they don't?
Once again, you said all those people, Todd. No, there are hundreds of thousands, if not millions of them, that can't. But when you say all those people hear all
That's right.
People.
All of the people that are grifting. All of the people that are grifting, Jeff. Jeez, aloo, America. 901-260-5926 is our telephone number. That's 901-260-5926. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Todd Stearns Radio Show. So yesterday, up on Capitol Hill, very interesting thing happened. There was a House Judiciary Committee hearing. A 16-year-old kid at Wylie High School, that's in Texas, a kid by the name of Marco Hunter Lopez, and he was invited to testify before Congress about the rise of Islam at his local high school. And it really was a truly fascinating conversation. And I want you to hear, and we're gonna play through some audio here. But it's this is the 16-year-old, and again, 16 years old, testifying before God and country and Congress, and so well composed. Cut number 30, please.
Can you tell us what are the requirements to create a student club at your school?
The requirements are to have 10 members, a teacher that's willing to sponsor, and a room to meet.
And did the Republican club that you formed meet those requirements?
We did on day one.
It did, and was your club allowed to be created?
No, we were actually notified that we were denied due to political nature, even though other ideological groups, including groups promoting gender-affirming ideology, were approved.
Why do you think the school had such a sort of obvious double standard?
I'm not sure if it's the educational establishment. It could be any of those. It could be the principals that have been in the system for a while. They just don't want conservative values. I think it's a trend we've seen with, how Charlie Kirk was on campuses and on high school campuses. I think that they think conservative values are a threat because they're true.
And how has the school administration either encouraged or supported World Hijab Day?
Our principal actually wore the hijab 2 years in a row that we know of. It could be more. She's posted it, promoted on social media, saying she, quote, loved it, all caps. And they're just promoting these events like nothing. But our club, on the other hand, has to receive strict, first of all, we weren't approved in the first place. And then once we were the only club that couldn't have other privileges that other groups had. And they took down our posters. And so there's just a lot of things in this double standard, clearly, to favor the Islamic group.
Is it true that your school's libraries offer Islamic literature, like the Quran and other things?
Yes. So McMillan Junior High in Wylie ISD offers a Quran, but no Bible available.
But no Bible. So there's a Quran, but the Bible's not allowed.
Correct.
Is that true in multiple libraries?
From what I know, confirmed, it's McMillan Junior High is one that I know of. I can look at the other libraries and submit them to you if I find any other findings.
Okay. Have you talked to the school about why they would allow a Quran but not a Bible?
So the principals actually run away from me and hide, so I can't have a discussion with my principals because I act like an adult and they act like children.
Yeah. Well, you very much are acting like an adult. They probably don't want to be on the record with that policy, given how egregious it is. When clubs such as your sponsor visitors to come to the school and speak about club interests, whatever they are they subject to security screenings?
So when our club has guest speakers, including a state representative or a congressman, we have to submit 2 weeks in advance paperwork. We have to submit a week in advance background check. We have to submit their staff if they're coming. All these lengthy processes. I often have to miss my lunch period and skip a meal to fill these out. But on the other hand, the Islamic group got favorable treatment.
Okay, yeah. What were the security protocols that were in place for the Islamic group?
From what I know, none.
None?
From what I know.
So typically you have to go through a lengthy background process, but this Islamic group didn't have.
Correct. Obviously they didn't background check the organization because it has multiple terror links, and they didn't, they didn't check the Sharia pamphlets that they gave us or the Qurans with the Shahada card. They were perfectly fine with it because the principal was there that day just looking at it, perfectly fine.
What's been the response from the school since you've been public and vocal about this double standard?
Like I said in my opening testimony, when my mom had requested the principal to email my teachers, because I had to miss school for the first day after that and I had to go late the second day because of death threats and things like that. And my mom had asked the principal to email my teachers just to keep an extra eye on me. And the principal told my mom, you can. So it's really, that speaks volumes to the approach of leadership that the school has and the school district has, because I guess they just wanted to dismiss my safety in that moment.
You received death threats?
Yes, sir.
What were some of the death threats? Could you tell us about them?
I had people saying that they were going to be at my house waiting for me to get home and they were going to shoot me. I had people telling me to kill myself, a lot of different things. But I know nobody can proclaim anything over me because I wake up every morning with victory with Christ.
Amen. That's exactly right. What has the school's response been to these death threats?
Like I said, that first day it was very dismissive. I actually received a death threat last year, and I believe I have emails, and I could submit them to the record of the principal saying, oh, things are already taken care of. Very, I would say, downgrading it or just minimizing specific situations. I could submit those emails to the record.
I just want to be clear. You had a threat against your life, somebody saying that they were going to come to your house and murder you.
Correct.
And your school's response was dismissive.
Correct.
All right. Riveting testimony. And we're going to play some more of this because one of the Democrats on the panel, on the committee, Jamie Raskin, really just disrespected this child. And the child held his ground, stood his ground, and just did a remarkable job. This is all part of a hearing on Sharia-free America, why political Islam and Sharia law are incompatible with the Constitution. Well, I want to bring into the conversation our good friend from Indiana, Congressman Marlon Stutzman. Congressman, good to have you with us today.
Todd, great to be with you. Thanks for having me on.
You know, I hear the testimony of this young man. I mean, so composed for a 16-year-old. I'm fairly certain I could not do anything like that when I was that age. And it's really, I'm just curious, you heard the testimony there. The idea that this is happening out of all places, Texas, Congressman.
Yeah, no, I mean, it is. It's ironically, this morning in our Bible study, we were talking about Christian nationalism and what people are trying to portray that as, and what we as conservatives truly believe, and we believe in religious freedom. But when you have a community that's trying to separate themselves and using Sharia law and imposing Sharia law, it's against the Constitution. So it's just not compatible with our Constitution, with the American system. So, you know, good for this young man for stepping up and speaking out. I mean, that's incredible. You know, we need adults to do the same thing and realize that America is founded on religious freedom. We're not founded on, theocracies. We're founded on Judeo-Christian principles. But this is really a conversation and a debate that has to happen because it can't go any further than what it already has.
Well, especially when you see what's happening in New York City over the past several days, the Muslims have been targeting Jews right outside of their synagogues, putting down the prayer rugs and shouting and chanting Allah Akbar.
Yeah.
It's not going to be long until they start doing that in front of the Catholic churches and the Protestant churches.
Yeah, no, I mean, this is going to be something that, you know, my kids and, you know, future generations are going to have to deal with. You shouldn't have to. And that's why it's important to address it now. And, you know, we need members of Congress. We need, of course, state legislatures and, you know, just those who are willing to speak up and say, this is not going to be allowed in the United States. You know, you look at other countries, and I've done a lot of work in the Middle East, and there are positive things happening in the Middle East. But many of them, I mean, including countries like Saudi Arabia, don't have religious freedom. You go try to, you know, establish a Christian church there, it's not likely going to happen. And so that, you know, America is so different than, you know, most of these countries. But what I fear and what we're seeing is already happening in Europe is they haven't been pushing back and they haven't been limiting this. And I can't remember the exact number. You might know it, but there's probably 25 mayors, Muslim mayors, that have been elected in England, in Great Britain. And that's changing the entire governing system there because of their ideology. And so that's why this conversation is so important to have.
Well, it is. And we're starting to see that happen in some towns in the Northeast, New Jersey and Michigan, but certainly not to the extent of what's happening in the U.K. On the Patriot Mobile Newsmaker line, we're honored to have Congressman Marlon Stutzman with us. Congressman, switching gears, we had your governor on yesterday on the show, and I was really surprised. He was really upset at the way the legislature there in Indiana has really dropped the ball when it came to redistricting. And of course, five out of the seven ended up getting beat in the primaries. What's your reaction to all of that hullabaloo?
Yeah, no, I agree with them. And this is something that we tried to explain to the state Senate. I served in the state Senate and know a lot of these senators and told them, like, look, this is they had all these different explanations and arguments on why we shouldn't do redistricting. And I said, look, this is not the fight that we started. This is a fight. You look at New England, and Massachusetts is a great example. It's about 60-40 Democrat. Out of the 9 congressional seats, they're all Democrat. Well, Indiana is just opposite. We're 60-40 Republican, and out of our 9 districts, 2 are Democrat, 7 are Republican. And if you had a kindergarten class draw the maps in Indiana, they would be 9-0 because we're so red in Indiana. So the governor did the right thing, saying, look, we're going to redraw the maps. This is the fight that we have with the Democrat Party. And senators said, no, we're not going to do it. We're not going to stick with the team. And they missed the message from their voters. In fact, as we talked to voters the day after the election, said, you know, well, why did you vote for the challenger? They said, well, because, you know, we need to fight back and make sure that Washington has balanced representation and that the system isn't manipulated by the Democrats where they take advantage of drawing maps in the blue states, and we do nothing but get rolled. And so the governor's absolutely right for doing what he did. And obviously, those 5 senators who, you know, paid the price. And I think that there's going to be others. If they don't redistrict in 2027, there's going to be more that get beat in 2028.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. And again, this is not about the Republicans winning. I mean, we're talking about generations that Democrats have been doing this to the Republicans. So it's really a matter of almost catching up. I do think, though, yeah. Congressman, I'm curious to hear your thoughts on this. I do think there needs to be some sort of a conversation about gerrymandering because it's it can get out of control. But at the same time, you cannot have the Democrats just doing what they've done for generations and Republicans do nothing.
It is. It's out of control. And, you know, there should be some sort of balance. And whether, you know, we use the baseline of the parties in each state that says, okay, look, you got to be within this realm. And look at Virginia, for example. Virginia's a 50-50 state, and they are 6-5 Democrats. So Democrat has, you know, the 6 Democrat seats that lean Democrat and 5 seats that lean Republican. Well, Democrats went to Virginia and took it to the ballot, won barely, to redraw the maps to make it 10-1, 10 Democrats to 1 Republican. So again, you can see that the Democrat Party has been doing this, and they know how to do it for a very long time. But if they play this game, which I think in the long run, we've got to figure something else out. I don't know exactly how that's done, you know, because the Constitution is clear. The states need to elect their representatives. It doesn't give guidance on drawing the maps, but we should have some sort of, you know, state across the fair representation according to the party line, you know, votes along the baselines. But that's for another conversation. We haven't done that, and I think that's why, you know, we have a president who said we're going to fight back. We're not going to just let the Democrat Party roll us in this situation. This is what we have to do. In the meantime, this is what we're going to do until something changes, if there's more fair maps.
Well, Congressman, we're going to leave you there. We're getting a little bit of a bad phone signal there, but I think we got the gist of that, and we sure do appreciate you joining us today on the show. Thanks, Congressman.
Thanks, Todd. Great to be with you today.
All right, Congressman Marlon Stutzman, ladies and gentlemen, from the great state of Indiana. By the way, tonight, 5 o'clock Eastern, we're going to be talking to the Lieutenant Governor of South Carolina, where, again, rogue Republicans have tried to stop redistricting efforts. One of the leaders of that effort, a Republican, said that the country is better when there's a strong Democrat Party. Okay, well, go join them, for crying out loud. So that's tonight, 5 o'clock Eastern, on the Todd Stern Show on Newsmax. By the way, a new study finds 70% of Americans are not getting full benefits. They deserve Social Security benefits. And there are some simple strategies available to boost Social Security benefits by as much as $188,000 over a lifetime. Social Security expert Michael Allen says this is true. It's all in a special report, and Newsmax wants to give you that report free of charge. We're going to send it to you right away, whether you're getting benefits or you soon will. You need the Social Security report. Call 800-999-9690. That's 800-999-9690. Text and data rates may apply. All right, welcome back to the Todd Stearns Radio Show. So Kamala Harris and the Dems are going to be holding a confab. They're calling it a no bad idea brainstorm. But I'm telling you, all of the ideas that I'm looking at here are very bad. One of the things they're looking at doing, the Democrats want to do, abolish the Electoral College. They want to pack the Supreme Court, and they want to make Puerto Rico and Washington, D.C. actual states. Kamala Harris now saying we've got to neutralize these red states from cheating. So look, the Democrats here, they're not even signaling. They're telling you exactly what they are going to do if they regain power in the midterm elections. So pay attention, ladies and gentlemen. Listen to the Democrats. And when they tell you that they are going to pack the Supreme Court and they're going to abolish the Electoral College, you've got to believe them. You got to believe every single thing the Democrats say, because unlike the Republicans, Republicans will lie to you, right? They just lie to your face. Oh, yeah, we'll do that. Yeah, we're going to back Trump's agenda. Oh, yeah, MAGA all the way. Well, you know, they're all liars. But the Democrats, no, they will. They're very honest with you. Kind of respect that. I wish the Republicans would be as honest. But God help us if the Democrats get back in charge of anything up on Capitol Hill. 901-260-5926, our telephone number. That's 901-260-5926. Was up a little late last night putting the final. So we're getting these galleys for the book, and it goes through a process. And I was working on the book last night. Looks great. It's going to be a beautiful book. I've seen the final design, and it's just really a nice project. Over 350 pages. So it's a pretty long book. It's called The Golden Age, How Trump Saved America. And I want you to get a copy of this. Folks, you can pre-order today at your favorite bookstore, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, Amazon. The book will be out this summer. It is scheduled to, I think, go to the press sometime in the next week or so. And this is going to be a big book. And I'm excited for the impact this could have in the country. And I'm excited for you to read it as somebody who listens to this radio show every single day. And as a matter of fact, some of our conversations we've had on the radio are actually featured, included in the book. So again, The Golden Age, How Trump Saved America. You can get it on the hardcover, Kindle. There is going to be an audio version. That is not ready yet. But again, you'll be able to get those. You'll be able to pre-order the hardcover and the Kindle version of The Golden Age. All right, hang tight, everybody. Hour two of the big show coming up. This is The Todd Stearns Show.
From the Liberty University Studio in Memphis, Tennessee, it's America's conservative blowtorch.
That's us. That's right. I love this American ride.
Todd Stearns.
Oh, yeah.
It's a lovely day here in Memphis, Tennessee. I hope it's a great day wherever you might be across America. And, Dylan, there's a lovely breeze outside, and as I stepped outside just to get some fresh air, and, wow, can I just tell you, I am, man, this, you know, the heart thing that I went through, I thought I was going to be able to bounce back a lot quicker. It's eaten my lunch, and so I was trying to go outside, get some fresh air, and clear my head, and I caught a whiff of barbecue in the air.
Uh-oh.
And I remembered it's the World Barbecue Championship. They're in town.
They are in town. It is fantastic championship.
Over 200 barbecue teams from around the world. And they're here in Memphis for the next couple of days. I think it started yesterday, and they had the huge ceremony, and including the annuals. They have a wrestling competition, and you wrestle in barbecue sauce, which sounds sort of messy, but they do provide wet wipes. So that's a good thing. And, of course, the opening ceremony, this is kind of interesting. They had the Budweiser Clydesdale horses. And I think they're just glad that there's no category for horse on the menu. So this is America. So anyway, they had the lighting of the grill, which is, you know, again, this is like the Olympics, the Super Bowl of swine, as they call it. And they had the lighting of the grill, much like the Olympic torch. And the sauce wrestling, which was presented by Dude Wipes, that was all last night. And, man, from here on out, it is all barbecue. And you've got, later on today, you're going to have the Mr. Piggy Idol contest. And that's, remember back in the day, Dylan, when guys used to, you know, they used to do this at school where the coaches would dress up like ugly women, you know, the ugly women contest.
Yes, I do remember.
All right, yeah. And that just used to be like normal fun, right?
Yes.
Now it's like, it's a letter in the alphabet activist chain.
Yeah, you have to add on to it.
Very strange. But anyway, they're doing a Mr. Piggy, or a Miss Piggy, rather. And it's basically a bunch of ugly dudes dressing up and strutting down the stage. All good, wholesome Christian fun at the barbecue competition. And then we're looking at a competition. I mean, this is really about pork, all right? So I don't want you folks in Texas to get terribly riled up here. But we're talking about pork. What you guys do is called brisket. And we love brisket, but it's not barbecue. This is barbecue. It is pork. And we have, I think there's sauce, but I'm a dry rub guy myself. Do you have any sort of a preference there, Dylan?
Not really. I like our dry rub. It's like the Memphis staple. I'm really not too, I haven't explored too far outside of that realm, though. So
$190,000 in prize money, by the way.
Wow.
This is a big deal. And the judges are not just folks that show up. You actually have to be certified and trained, professionally trained, to be a judge. I mean, this is the real deal. Again, at the World Championship Barbecue Cooking Contest, it is the most prestigious barbecue cooking contest on the planet. Oh, by the way, they have a category for kids too now. That's always a good thing. You want to get the young people involved and all that sort of whatnot. So I like that. We're trying to get somebody on, but you know they really can't be pulled away. And Dylan, if we would have thought about this, we could have just done the show down there at the barbecue competition.
I think I would have been tempted a little too much to actually eat all the barbecue. So. But that's not a bad idea.
Well,
for next year.
No, and I want to find out what is it? What is it that makes barbecue the best in the business? Because everybody's got something, right? They've got their own rubs or their own sauces. And I'm just curious, what is it that makes barbecue world champion barbecue? That's what I want to know.
I don't think that they would tell you because it is like their secret, right? It's like the secret sauce or the secret turn over when it's too hot.
So the major, you've got the categories, ribs, shoulder, and whole hog. Then patio, and open fire. And the teams, they have some pretty clever names. You've got Won't Stop Porkin, Back Bay Boar Lords. Oh, that's interesting. You've got the Fat Boys. That's P-H-A-T, the Fat Boys. And also the Parrot Head Porkers of Hoggaritaville. Are you picking up on the swine?
That's pretty good. Yeah, I like these so far.
Sweet Cheeks, that's one of the other teams. You've got Big Ho-Ho's, that's Big Ro-Ro's Barbecue. My apologies there. Also, Fathead Barbecue and the Beached Pig by Dude Wipes. Not sure. You know, I don't think I want the word wipe in my barbecue name. I'm just saying. So anyway, just hundreds, over 200 teams are competing, including Brown Chicken, Brown Cow, Snoutcast, Southern Hoggers, Poker Porkers, and Pablo Esco Barbecue.
That's my favorite right there. If we're going off names, that's the winner for me.
But can we talk about something else here? There's also, and this is their official name, the Norwegian National Barbecue Team. I am really intrigued by this.
That sounds very competitive.
Oh, we love barbecue. Yeah. I mean, what is that? How do you get to be a member of the National Barbecue Team of Norway?
Yeah. I wonder if they cook it any differently than how we do.
I wonder if it's barbecue. I mean, what are they barbecuing?
Yeah, what animal?
What kind of critters do they have up in Norway? Totally Bored. Oh, that's clever. Porkin' in the Park. Oh, God, you can't say that on national radio. Swiggin' and Piggin'. And, oh, here we go. Hammy Sagar Barbecue.
That's good.
So years ago, Fox News sent me down to cover the Memphis. I was always looking for an angle to get back home to visit everybody in Memphis, and that the company had to pick up the tab. So they sent me down to cover the barbecue festival. We ended up meeting up with these guys from Birmingham, Alabama, and they're one of the popular teams, and they invited our camera crew, our guys, back after hours. And so we went down there, and Dylan, they actually had these huge, like, you know, the Milo's tea jugs, the gallon tea. All right. So they had those filled with moonshine.
Oh.
And they had this strawberry, like, strawberry daiquiri mix or something. I don't know, some sort of a beverage. And they would pour it in there and shake it up. And they were drunk after one sip.
Yeah. It makes sense to me. Yeah.
I think a couple went blind. They couldn't. Heavy, but they held their liquor. I'll tell you that much. So anyway, give us a call if you've got some ideas. Oh, Steel and Squeal Barbecue.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
I think the people that won last year are actually, they were from Olive Branch. So very locals.
Olive Branch, Mississippi. KWAM listeners.
Yes.
Oh, Rub Me Tender.
I like that.
That's clever. And Hogapalooza. I think I've heard of them before. And the Hog Wild, you've got the Hog Wild competition team and Swinos. Swinos Wet, which I suppose means they're going to be not a dry rub team. And of course, Fat Head Barbecue and Dirty Old Basters. Had to be careful there. It's going to get wild in Memphis, I'm afraid.
And very yummy in Memphis.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Oh, by the way, yesterday, ladies and gentlemen, we took a little turn and did something a little different. It was President Trump. He was calling on Americans to have more babies. All of you young people, you young, fertile Americans. And so we wanted to do our part for the MAFA movement. That's Make America Fertile Again. And we created a baby-making playlist. And this is, it's a pretty good list here of songs, Dylan, from Teddy Pendergrass, Turn Out the Lights. Soft and slow. Oh, my.
Classical. You got to have something to read the list.
Holy smokes. The Platters made the list.
Baby, you know which one.
Only you.
Not you.
Oh, here's Marvin Gaye. What was it Helen said? Seasonal healing. No, that was not that song, Helen. But
slight mix-up.
Close.
Yeah.
Josh Turner, Your Man, made the list. Marvin Gaye, Let's Get It On. Barry White. I think everything Barry White does is on the list. Now, here's something. Randy Travis, Forever and Ever, Amen. The Righteous Brothers, Unchained Melody. Ronnie Millsap, haven't heard of him in a long time. Is he still alive? That's impolite to ask. Daydreams About Night Things and Pure Love. Shaggy, is that like from Scooby-Doo?
I don't think so.
It says, it's Boombastic. I thought it said Boombastic. It's Boombastic.
What basket?
The Temptations. George Michael. Get George Michael off this list.
Oh, he's good.
Come on.
He's good.
Sam Cooke. Bring it on home to me. Oh, Mustang Sally. Here we go. Chicago, You're the Inspiration. That's a good song. Chicago, you know, it's got to be the right mood.
There are, like, sweet songs on this list, and there are raunchy songs on this list. It's a list for everyone.
Yeah, can't fight this feeling anymore. Oh, that was like the 80s, like,
that's just
REO Speedwagon. A Wild Thing from the Troggs. Love to Love You, Baby, Donna Summer. Love the One You're With, Stephen Stills. Oh, Michael Bolton, When a Man Loves a Woman. So if you do have selections, we're going to be publishing this list on the website. This is the Todd Stearns. Babe, keep that music going because I'm not quite finished yet. We got a note I've got to read, Dylan. Oh. But anyway, give us a call if you've got a selection, your favorite love song, 901-260-5926. Well, we got a note from Phil, who listens to us out in Fort Hays, That's Fort Hays State University over in Kansas. Phil said, Todd, I was in and out of the car all afternoon yesterday, so someone else may have said this. With regard to your song list, you know today, Wednesday, Todd, is hump day. Thank you, Phil. Appreciate you. All right. Let's, you know what? Let's go to break. A little bit more Teddy Pendergrass there. This is the Todd Stearns Radio Show. Welcome back, everybody. This is the Todd Stearns, pardon me, radio show. Let's go to the phone lines. Clarksville, Georgia, Teresa is listening to us on WDUN. Teresa, how can we help you on this fine day?
Hello, Todd. How are you doing?
You know, I'm doing well. Thank you for asking.
Good. Well, the reason I'm calling, you said you wanted to know anybody's favorite love song.
Yes.
Well, David and I, that's my husband, we will be married 41 years this year. And our favorite song is Let's Make Love by Tim McGraw and Faith Hill.
Oh, that's actually a really nice song. 41
yes.
years, you say?
Yeah, we've been together for 43. Yes, sir.
Wonderful. So what's the secret sauce there? How do you make a long-standing relationship work?
Well, I would say you never go to bed angry, and you never stop telling someone how much you care about them and how much you love them.
That's really good advice. Really good advice, Teresa. And you can't go wrong with that. Oh, is this it? Is this the song?
That's it.
Oh, my.
It's a beautiful song.
So you're there in the Clarksville and the North Georgia mountains, and the sun is setting.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you got some vintage, I don't know, Louisiana sweet tea there.
Yes, sir. Well, you have a great day, Todd.
Teresa, well, thank you for calling in. And, thank you for the song. I like this. Let's Make Love. So, well, that's the name of the song. Yes, sir. All right, Teresa, God bless you and your great husband, David. Yeah, this is a good song. I forgot about this one.
I don't think I've heard this, but I'm liking it.
Yeah. I guarantee you, a lot of folks in the North Georgia mountains have. All right, there you go. Again, it goes back to this whole idea of President Trump, and say what you want to about the president, but he really does care about this country, and the reality is we have got to start, you know, we've got to start procreating America. I mean, that's the bottom line. I'm just telling you. So get to it. Let's go to John in Dawsonville, Georgia, who wants to talk about that young man from Texas, Wiley High School. Hi, John. What's going on?
Todd, it's your old friend, John, from Dawsonville.
John, good to hear from you.
Before I get serious here, let me first say I'm glad you got through your heart procedure all right. But you need to stay away from that barbecue contest or you'll have another stint.
John, I tell you, I'm struggling because I really did think that gravy and barbecue sauce was a lubricant for those arteries, and it's just not true, my friend. It's not true.
I know. I've got three of them. I know where you're coming
from.
Have you
had to go through that three times?
Three times. Still kicking.
John, well, I'm glad to hear that, but I got to tell you, I can barely get through it the first time. So anyway, go ahead. What were we talking about?
Well, and then I got a song for you. It's kind of a raunchy one, but if you do the live version, it's long enough to where you can finish what you started before the song's over, and that's Slow Ride by Foghat.
Thank you. Thank you for that visual. Yeah, appreciate that, John.
Anyway, I have told you before about I don't know how long it's going to be, but we're going to end up fighting these Islamists in the streets in this country before it's over with. And, you know, I hope it's a long, long time, but I don't know. And I'll tell you another thing that I believe. Everybody talks about, oh, well, all Muslims aren't extremists, you know, there's good Muslims, you know, blah, 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 which is fine, all fine and good. But I guarantee you, if your nice Muslim neighbor will be trying to kill you if we end up having to battle these people in the streets for our country. All these Muslims that say they're not extremists, they'll turn extremist when it comes down to it.
John, I hope everybody's paying attention to what's happening in Brooklyn, New York this week, because that should not be happening in this country. And my concern is they're already throwing down the prayer rugs and shouting Allah Akbar in front of the synagogues. They're going to be doing that in our neighborhoods very soon. And I'm with you. I don't see that ending well. I really don't. And we've got to get a handle on this.
And Todd, I owe you an apology, because I told you a couple weeks ago to stay away from the barbecue joints because I saw you on TV.
Oh, yes.
What I should have said was,
oh, God,
next time you go to the barbecue place, just get a half rack and no potato salad.
John, I'm sorry, but what's the point? What's the point in living if that's what you're going to do at the barbecue joint? That would be my question. But, John, thank you. It's coming from a good place in your heart. John from Dawsonville. All right, hang tight. Oh, by the way, another country music song somebody just sent in, Dylan. Get off the stove, Granny. You're too old to ride the range. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back, everybody. This is the Todd Stearns Radio Show. Great to have you with us. I want to play some audio. This is for all of you folks in North Carolina. This is a crazy story. So the NAACP, and I mentioned this to you yesterday, we now have the audio. The NAACP in Charlotte, North Carolina, has now said on the record that there's no way that a white guy should be allowed to be mayor of Charlotte. The current mayor has resigned. She's a black woman. She's been the mayor for a long time. Anyway, one of the guys they're looking at in the interim is a white guy, and that set off the NAACP. Listen to Cut 32, please.
Why would we replace the black outgoing mayor with a white person? That simple.
NAACP Charlotte-Mecklenburg chapter president Corinne Mack refusing to walk back her comments in this Facebook post from Monday. Mack wrote that it is, quote, seriously disturbing for white folks to be lobbying to be Charlotte's interim mayor. City Council is currently searching for someone to serve out the remainder of Vi Lyles' term, who is set to resign at the end of June. In an interview with Queen City News on Wednesday, Mack argued recent rulings on voting rights and redistricting efforts are evidence of black representation being undermined and stripped, and that voters in Charlotte have been intentional about having black representation.
And my question to the white folks who are up in arms and outraged, are they outraged about the fact that black representation is under attack? Are they outraged about the gerrymandering that's happening all over this country?
Martin Luther King is rolling over in his grave thinking about, you know, hearing something like what was said today in that post.
Abdul Ali, the vice chair for the 12th Congressional Republican Party, rejected Mack's argument, saying it's antithetical to the original mission of the NAACP.
I think it's ridiculous because we're not talking about black people not being able to vote. We're not talking about black people not being able to run for office. If that were the case in any law that came out, whether it was done by the Trump administration or Republicans in any state, I'd stand with her against that. But that's not what we're talking about.
The search for interim mayor, meanwhile, is still in its early stages, but council has said they want Lyles' replacement ready in time for her June 30th resignation.
All right. You know, if I were a white guy and I was under consideration, or a white gal, I'd be heading over to the tanning salon right away. Right away. You know, Dylan, I do wonder, though. The NAACP woman brings up an interesting point. Are there some things that white people should not be allowed to do? I mean, clearly in Charlotte, North Carolina, you can't be the mayor because, you know, if you're of the Caucasian persuasion. But I'm wondering if there are other careers that white people should just stay away from.
Yeah, I'm going to let you have that one if you have any.
I was thinking right away, hip hop artist.
Okay. Yeah. What do you say to Eminem then?
Hip hop artist.
Okay.
That's what I say. Let's bring into the conversation Luke Symbol, our political strategist. Luke, do you know of any jobs that white people should not be doing?
Look, Todd, this is completely unacceptable. And it is just amazing to me that these very groups like the NAACP that were started to get rid of race-based hiring, to advocate, and you know, Martin Luther King Jr. said it best, judge people by the content of their character, not the color of their skin. And now these very same groups are now advocating and stating that somebody should be given a job because of their skin color. And we just saw it with the Ketanji Brown Jackson addition to the Supreme Court with the Biden administration. They specifically said they wanted a black woman in that role. That is disgusting. And rather than look at who is best for the job, like the mayor of Charlotte, rather than look who is best for the job, they are choosing first to look at skin color. Not only is that illegal, race-based hiring is against federal law, but it is morally bankrupt, and we have to call it out. And kudos to you, Todd, for making this a national story.
Well, yeah, they got to call it out, but you know they're doing it. I mean, yeah, everything you said is true, but they've been doing it, and they're not the only ones. Sure. And you know, you live in Memphis, Tennessee, and the unspoken joke is that if you're not black or Democrat, you're not getting elected. I mean, that's it, because people do not they vote on skin color.
You're right. Not only is it an unspoken rule, it is a spoken rule. People just openly accept it. We have a county commissioner here in Memphis, Shelby County, where Memphis is located, who every time there is a contract that comes up before the county commission, she asks about the racial makeup of that contractor. How many people of color do you employ? She asks. That is illegal. And if only we had a company who is going out for the bid owned by a white person, or maybe employees of that contractor, potential contractor, to sue Shelby County government and say you are not allowed to have race-based considerations when contracting. It is against federal law. It cannot be a consideration at all. And yet we hear it now on the national stage. We're hearing it in Charlotte. And yes, we hear it in Memphis, Tennessee. It is toxic. And that is why I'm so glad that the Supreme Court struck down the race-based, the majority-minority congressional districts, well, any legislative districts. I'm so glad they struck that down, because that just adds to the toxicity of our electoral process, where you have groups that are saying, well, we want a majority-minority district, and because of that, we vote Democrat. That's just gross. That's disgusting. We need to be focusing on the things that bring us together as Americans and not what separates us, like skin color and gender, etc.
Well, what the NAACP woman said is very important, because there is a mindset in this country that the certain political positions can only be held by black people. And to your point, that's when the Supreme Court stepped in and said, no, that's unconstitutional, and you're going to have to redo these congressional districts. You can't be deciding districts just to ensure that a person of a certain skin color gets elected. So I'm especially excited to see Tennessee standing up to the Democrats here and redistricting and quite frankly gutting what used to be Congressman Steve Cohen's congressional district. How do you think that plays out?
Look, I think it plays out. I think the courts are going to uphold it. Tennessee did a really good job. The attorney general did a good job of navigating the legislature through what they needed to do. And here's the thing that people are missing in the conversation. You cannot vote in an unconstitutional legislative district. The Supreme Court ruled that drawing legislative lines based on race is unconstitutional. And so it really confounds me when you look at Mississippi and South Carolina that are kind of backing down on this issue. If a district is unconstitutional, the DOJ can come in and sue the state. And so maybe that's what needs to happen here now. The DOJ has already gone into Texas and worked with Texas, and Texas redrew its lines. They were going to come into Tennessee, I bet, if we did not redraw our lines. And now Mississippi and South Carolina are backing down. No, the DOJ, let's get involved here.
It's going to be ugly, and you're going to have Republicans that are pushing back. You know, I know in South Carolina, what a complete mess that was. And tonight, 5 o'clock on the Newsmax show, we're going to have the lieutenant governor of South Carolina joining us. I think it's also a reminder that a lot of the Southern Republicans, I wouldn't say a lot, a good many of them are actually Democrats. I mean, in their heart of hearts, I think they're Democrats.
Yeah, this whole, we need to go along, we need to get along. And again, that's ignoring the constitutional issues here. We need to go along and get along. Those days are behind us. Donald Trump has taught the Republican Party how to fight back and how to use the same tools that Democrats have been using for decades. Like, this is nothing new. Democrats have been playing this game, and Republicans are finally catching up. And if we get smart, savvy Republicans willing to fight, we're going to do it better. And it just, they don't get it, and those people need to be voted out of office, just like we saw in Indiana with those state senators who were voted out of office in primaries because of this issue. The American people, and the Republican base, rather, are saying, fight back. We want you to fight, and we want you to win. And this whole spineless Republican who, you know, cares whatever the Chamber of Commerce thinks, they're fine with unfettered immigration. No, the American people are fed up with it. Start fighting, fight back, and play the game better. All we are doing is playing the game that the Democrats have been playing for decades.
I like this idea. And again, we've got to push back, and we've got to play hardball here. I mean, that's all there is to it. All right, Luke, how is the 7th congressional race? It looks like you've got a lot of folks running. Senator Brent Taylor, who we've had on the show, looks like he could be the front runner here. I have no polling, official polling data, but he certainly is racking up a lot of big endorsements around the country.
Yes, that 9th congressional district that Steve Cohen held for so long, we have a lot of Republicans and Democrats running in that district now. You're right. State Senator Brent Taylor has been endorsed by Senators Marsha Blackburn, Bill Hagerty, state legislators across the state. I really think he is the front runner at this point. I think you will see some very important endorsements coming out in the coming days. And look, he was viewed, you've had him on your show, Todd, on the radio show and Newsmax. He's been viewed as a fighter who wins for Memphis and Shelby County, tackling the crime issue, taking on the Soros-backed DA, getting accountability for the DA, forcing soft-on-crime judges to resign in his Make Memphis Matter initiative. It is very rare for a state legislator to be a household name in a community, and that's certainly what State Senator Brent Taylor has done, and now he's a statewide name as he runs for this 9th congressional district, and I think you'll see a large primary victory for him in August, and he's going to be battling radical leftist and racist Justin Pearson in the general election, I bet, in November. Justin Pearson has declared he's going to run in the 9th district. His announcement yesterday was absolutely disgusting, likening the Republican Party to the KKK and white supremacy. It was nasty, and he must be defeated in November, and I think Brent Taylor is the best person to do that.
I wonder if do we know which version is running? Is it the college-educated white Justin Pearson with the power fro, or is it the Jiven Justin? Do we know which one?
It is definitely the latter, Todd.
Oh, the Jiven. All right. Wow. All right. That ought to be interesting, because Senator Taylor doesn't, to my knowledge, doesn't jive talk. And unlike, what is it, Mrs. Cleaver on June Billingsley airplane movie.
Oh, Todd, you always try to get jive. Me in trouble when I come on.
No. We're just talking amongst friends. All right, Luke Semble, good stuff, and we look forward to checking in with you next week.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
All right. No, do you remember that scene out of Airplane? Dylan, please tell me you've seen the Airplane parody movie.
I haven't. I know the jokes, though.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Well, so the joke was that Barbara Billingsley, who played Mrs. Cleaver on Leave It to Beaver, was a very prim and proper woman. And so anyway, the plane, these two passengers, two black dudes, were in distress, and they were speaking jive, and no one could understand the guys. So in the movie, Miss Billingsley, her character, comes over and says, "Pardon me, I speak jive." And we're going to pull that scene. It's one of the best scenes of all time. That was a great decade for comedy movies. You had Police Academy. You had the airplane movies. It was good stuff. Pardon me, I speak jive. All right, 901-260-5926. Dylan, I want to rethink this. It's not jobs that white people should not have. Maybe we should be refining that to the jobs that we are qualified to have. as white folks.
Yeah, I like that.
A mayonnaise maker.
100%. White bread maker.
Definitely white bread.
Not Ritz cracker, but saltine.
Saltine American, baby.
Yes.
A lot of people get upset. They asked me, someone asked me, do you get upset when people call you a cracker? And I said, no, I really don't, but I prefer saltine American. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a nuance thing, but paint. It matters. White painter. Yeah. Definitely mild food. No hot sauce.
No seasonings.
No seasoning.
Of any kind.
No seasoning. So maybe that's a job we can't have, is a spice in the spice world.
Oh, no, none.
We can't do that. Oh, we also can't be choir directors. We can't hit that downbeat.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got no rhythm. Our people got no rhythm.
If you're a Baptist.
Well, I don't know about that. Anyway, we'll come up with a list. Again, we just want to help people here. That's all we do on this program. We help people, and I appreciate the NAACP. I'm trying to get the inflection right. The NAACP. 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 Anyway, they don't think white people should be serving as a mayor in Charlotte, North Carolina. So, anyway, got to take a break here. This is the Todd Stern Show.
Can I get you something?
It's your mofo butter laying me to the bone, jacking me up. Tighten me.
I'm sorry, I don't understand.
Cuddy say can't hang.
Oh, stewardess, I speak jive.
Oh, good.
He said that he's in great pain and he wants to know if you can help him.
All right, would you tell him to just relax and I'll be back as soon as I can with some medicine.
Just hang loose, blood. She's gonna catch up on the rebound on the med side.
What it is, big mama. My mama raised no dummies. I duck her rap.
Cut me some slack, Jack. Chomp don't wanna help. Chomp don't get the help.
Say can't hang. Say seven up.
Jive ass dude don't got no brains in him.
It was one of the funniest movies. And the thing is, Dylan, back in the day, you would actually go to the movie theater, right? We didn't have we didn't have Blockbuster and all that stuff. We didn't have Netflix. So you'd have to go to the actual movies. And so we would just go as kids. We would go over and over and over again so we could catch. There were so many lines. Great stuff.
What the ticket price is like 49 cents back then?
49 cents. God, what are you talking about?
I love going to the movies now. It's actually, I think it's coming back, going to the movies.
Is really? So yes. People are, there's like a resurgence.
Yeah, I mean, Netflix and all them are raising their prices constantly. So, you know, the movie tickets were expensive, but I don't know. I think it's just about the experience now. They just want to be back outside of the house.
Have you noticed that, for example, Amazon Prime, I'll just say this, I watch The Boys, which is a crazy series. so insane.
18 plus, actually.
Yeah. Well, actually, I think it's 30 plus.
Yeah, 30 plus.
But anyway, the commercials, it's like you upgrade to get the without the commercials. Well, they keep adding the commercials and charging you more money. It makes absolutely no sense.
I thought that we were upgraded because I also watch The Boys. And, came to find out every 15 minutes, it's a minute and 30-second ad.
Unbelievable. And so at what point, I mean, the whole point of getting those services was to not have to worry about the commercials.
Exactly.
And so now I guarantee you people are probably paying twice or three times as much as they were when they were just getting their regular cable.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That is happening right now, yeah.
So that's interesting. I'm happy to hear that because it was really for a while, you know, those theaters were pretty empty. Nobody wanted to go to the movies.
Yeah, it really does depend on what's coming out. I recently saw The Sheep Detective. You probably don't care about that, but it's a movie that came out and I went to go see it. So I did my part.
Well, good for you.
Yes.
Good for you. I mean, back in the day, everybody went to the movies. That was where you hung out. You know, your parents would drop you off and you'd have the afternoon, you know, there at the movies. And maybe if it was on the weekends, you could maybe go watch two movies. But now, you know, you got all the kids. Nobody knows how to behave in the movie theaters anymore. You got the young people making out. You try to tell them, go take that to the car. You know, not here. People are screaming and talking on their iPhones. Nobody knows how to behave in public anymore.
Yeah, you're right. That is tough. You have to pick the right movie to go to at the right time.
All right. So, well, there. I wish they would start making movies like Airplane again. That's some funny stuff. All right, we got to take a break here. 901-260-5926 is our telephone number. That's 901-260-5926. This is the Todd Stern Show.
From the Liberty University Studio in Memphis, Tennessee, it's America's favorite gun-toting, Bible-clinging, deplorable American.
That's us. That's right. I love this American ride.
Todd Starnes.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, Jimmy Kimmel is under fire from a lot of different areas. You've got every Republicans up in arms. The Trump administration. And now, National Religious Broadcasters. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Hour 3 of the Big Show. Great to have you with us today. So, Jimmy Kimmel making some really crass, disgusting jokes, taking shots at President Trump and the First Lady, and it was just really ugly stuff. But honestly, everything Jimmy Kimmel does is pretty ugly. Now, the NRB is getting involved in all of this, and I want to go right away to our Patriot Mobile Newsmaker line and welcome Mike Ferris, who is the general counsel for NRB. And, Mike, I understand that you guys have actually filed a complaint with the FCC. First, good to have you with us. Second, tell us about this complaint.
Well, first, Todd, I'm really glad to see you back in the saddle. We were praying for you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Second, we have defended Jimmy Kimmel's First Amendment rights in the past. In a prior mix-up with or flap with the FCC, where he is being basically challenged because of his unfair, inaccurate renditions about the president. That's free speech. He should be able to do that. The reason that we said something on this particular occasion was because violence was involved. The implication when he says, here's an expectant widow and shows the First Lady on the air, that is an invitation to someone, at least implicitly an invitation, for someone to commit violence against the President of the United States. And free speech has a recognized barrier when it comes to the advocacy of violence, particularly against elected officials and especially the President of the United States. And so we filed a request for the FCC to investigate this because the free speech doctrines apply in the First Amendment broadcast context, but there's a balance there. And we believe the balance trips in the favor of doing something when there is an advocacy of violence.
And again, I think this is the big challenge, you know, Michael. Mike, where does all of this, you know, where is that line, especially when it comes to, you know, late night comedians, whether or not they may be funny or not?
Well, it's the First Amendment is very broad, and it certainly protects the right to say something that the people in power don't like. I mean, that's the essence of the First Amendment. And so we need to stand for that. And we need to stand for that when we don't like what they're saying. We need to stand for that when we do like what people are saying. We need to be consistent about that. But there are recognized limitations. And the key case of this is Brandenburg versus Ohio, where a person was advocating violence. And there's a three-step test here for criminal prosecutions that you have to be advocating violence in a way that people understand it to be so. And secondly, you have to intend it, and then that's got to be the necessary consequence, the predictable consequence of what you're saying. The one element that's hardest to tell from just listening to the statement is what he intended. But we believe in the broadcast context, it should be really more the test should be, is the reasonable listener, does it interpret it as an invitation to violence, soliciting violence against the President of the United States? And if a reasonable interpreter understands to be soliciting violence, we think that the public broadcasting context warrants a slight adjustment of the Brandenburg test, but essentially maintaining the core elements of Brandenburg. And that's a recognized exception to First Amendment. You can't, there, you know, others, defamations, not protected, yelling theater at a crowded fire is not protected, or the other way around, whichever you prefer. We think that the advocacy of violence should be something that we make sure that is not broadcast over our airways.
Yeah, no, I see that. I just, for me as a broadcaster, I do this every day, and I crack a lot of jokes, and some people on the left would probably be offended by a lot of them. I would just be concerned if the other side decided, okay, well, let's go after the conservatives now and try to shut them down as well.
Well, that's exactly what the Biden administration did. They called in into the White House on a regular basis all the social media companies and told them to shut down messages that they don't like. And so, you know, they're already doing that. That's not new. But the constitutional line is the line between violence and nonviolence. We don't like it is one thing. And by violence, I mean actual physical violence. Inviting someone to kill someone, that's violence. The idea that all speech is violence and you hurt my feelings and that's violence, that doesn't count. That's not a constitutional test. That's an emotional test that prevails in some college classrooms. That's not a real legal test. The real legal test is actual physical violence, pulling out a gun. That's violence.
Yeah, and that certainly makes sense. So you guys have filed the complaint. Have you heard anything back from the FCC?
No, this is the kind of complaint that we've only asked for an investigation. You can file a complaint with the FCC that amounts to a lawsuit. We've not done that because we don't have the investigatory power that the FCC has to find out what Jimmy Kimmel intended. And his intention does matter, but they have the power to demand records and logs and email traffic and so on to see what was he thinking. What were the plans for the show to say, is this something that they intended someone to say? Well, we hope somebody listens and pays attention to it. If they found something like that, they're going to have evidence of intention, and that will that could potentially not only be an FCC matter, that could be a criminal matter if they find evidence of intent.
You know, it's interesting. You mentioned the Biden administration, and the reality is, man, did they really went after a lot of conservative broadcasters, but also a lot of Christian broadcasters as well. And that did not get a lot of play in the national media during those years.
No, it didn't. That case ended up in the Supreme Court of the United States, and the court, went in the right direction, but they did not draw a very strong free speech line in the sand. The brief that I filed for National Religious Broadcasters in that case argued that the exception in First Amendment cases for the government to be able to invade free speech requires proof that there's a compelling governmental interest. And the idea that we want to silence you because we disagree with you is never a compelling governmental interest. We advocated a rule that the government, when we're talking about protected speech, the government can never say, we want you to shut them down. They can say, please broadcast our message. They can say, we disagree with this message and here's why. Fine, say that all you want. What the government cannot legitimately do is say, we want you to silence people who disagree with us. That was our position in that case.
All right. Well, Mike, we're going to have to leave it there. We always appreciate the great work you guys are doing over at NRB. And please keep us up to speed on how all of this transpires with Jimmy Kimmel.
Thank you very much, Doug. Keep up the good work.
All right. There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Mike Farris, who is the general counsel for National Religious Broadcasters. And I think ultimately this is going to be the big argument here. I'm one of those I'm a free speech purist. I think you ought to be able to say whatever you want to say. Yeah, are there consequences for that in some cases? Absolutely, there are consequences. But my concern here is they have done this to conservatives. They've done it to me, and it is an ugly thing. And trust me, if the Democrats ever get back in charge again, they're going to come after all of us. But I think, at the end of the day, the best way to deal with the Jimmy Kimmel is to turn off the TV and let his sponsors know why you're not watching his show and therefore not watching their ads. Let the marketplace handle Jimmy Kimmel. 901-260-5926. That's our telephone number. That's 901-260-5926. This is the Todd Stearns Show. All right. Welcome back. So we had Mary Walter and Kay Smythill on my Newsmax show. Those ladies, always a lot of fun. A pretty serious topic, though, a situation out of Loudoun County where more than 40 young girls have now been victims of a transgender dude who actually took their photos in bathroom stalls at the high school. Let's take a listen to our ladies panel featuring Mary Walter and Kay Smythill. To you first. Again, it's Loudoun County, and this is not the first time we've had some sort of an allegation like this.
No, Loudoun County has its fair share of promises, but see, this is how you know that it's a dude and not a woman. Because a woman would never think to do something like that because it's gross. Like, I don't know of one woman who would ever say, "Ooh, I have to film other girls going to the bathroom." That wouldn't happen. So this is the dead giveaway that this is a dude and not a woman, and has nothing to do with biology in this instance. They can scream all they want, but this is a pattern that, if you're paying mild attention, we're seeing this pattern where kids who are transgender wind up, and adults too, wind up being sex offenders, wind up committing some horrible crimes against women, and sometimes against young boys as well. But there's a pattern here because this is an undiagnosed mental illness, in my humble opinion. I am not a doctor, but in my humble opinion, there is a common thread and we need to look into it. I don't know if it's the medication or it was there before.
Okay, and we're getting some breaking news. We understand the superintendent there in Loudoun County, Dr. Aaron Spence, has been called to testify before Congress. There's a hearing called Breaking Trust, Attacks on Parental Rights, Inappropriate Content, and Legal Abuses in American Schools. I'm still trying to understand here, and I support the Trump administration's efforts, but this was all supposed to be resolved thanks to that executive order the president signed, and it seems like the schools are simply ignoring the executive order.
Well, that's sort of classic liberal schooling in not just America, but all over the Western Hemisphere at this point. Like, I don't know what is in the water in Loudoun County, but they just have these ongoing, like you said, it's Loudoun County again. There is just something, there's something going on there, and it needs to be investigated, like, deeply. We need to look into the actual root cause and sociology of what is going on in that place. And you're right, Todd, this should have been resolved by Trump's executive order. But this is where all these liberal groups come in and try and fight what they know to be right, because they're funded by people who make money off issues like the whole, like, transgender thing. You know, Mary, I thought you were incredibly diplomatic and very fair in your response by saying that, in your opinion, it's a mental disease. I think it's 100% a mental disease. It's not a real thing. Yeah. Being transgender is not a real thing. Wanting to dress in women's clothes and parade around pretending to be a woman is a mental health issue. We used to just call it cross-dressing, and it was a weird thing that men did behind closed doors because it's part of their, you know, like, sexual orientation or whatever you want to call it. It's not a real thing. If transgenderism was a real thing, it would have been around forever. It's not. And it's just absolutely disgusting that, once again, it is young women, and it is sometimes young boys, who end up becoming the victims of these other young boys and young men and some young women who, you know, really should be taken aside and explained to them, listen, if you want to dress in the clothes of the opposite gender, be my guest. You know, be my guest. But you don't get to go and then pretend to be that gender. You don't then get, you know, indulged and spoiled and told that you're special because this is a thing that you want to do. It's not a real thing. It's just, you know, hopefully a temporary situation for a lot of these young men and women. And they're not being treated for whatever this mental health disease is that they have. I don't know. I could rant on about all this right, all ladies. Day, guys, if you let me. So don't let me.
No. Yeah, we don't have. Yeah, I wish we had time to rant, but we've got an agenda here we got to follow, ladies. And of course, by the way, all of us follow each other on X. And so, folks, hang out with us on the social media platforms. We make beautiful tweets together. Mary, I saw one of yours. You reposted a video of a Monmouth County realtor exposing the unbelievable tax rates imposed on New Jersey homeowners. Let's watch this.
This should truly be criminal. $185,000 transfer tax on a home that's closing tomorrow for one of my sellers. We're closing at $4 million. They're paying a 4% mansion tax on top of their New Jersey real estate transfer tax. Get this, if they were moving out of state, they would have an additional 2% withholding. Something does need to change. I don't like to be political, but this is outrageous.
Okay, I still don't get why you folks in New Jersey can't pump your own gas, but Mary, this is insanity right here.
Okay, I could rant about pumping your own gas because it's amazing and wonderful and you don't know what you're missing, okay? That's the first thing. But we could do a whole segment on that. All right, so here's the thing. There's several different things, and she conflated two of them. All right, I wrote them down. The mansion tax is what she's talking about. This came in 2004, and it was to punish people who can sell their home for over $1 million, you know, so we can give the money to other people. Well, it hasn't been adjusted for 22 years. The price has not been adjusted. The cap has not been adjusted. In Monmouth County, where she is and where I live, homes don't go for much under $1 million. It just is what it is because we're so close to New York and it's so easy to get to the city on the ferry that as New Yorkers flee, they come to within like a mile commute and here we are. And they pay far over asking price. So homes are skyrocketing. I don't think there's a home, if I'll take out the condos in my town, that sells under $1 million.
Yeah.
So you have to pay 1% above that. And it goes up. Now, I thought it stopped at 3.5%. She said 4%. But then the other thing that she's talking about, also known as the exit tax, is the real estate fee. It's the capital gains that you pay 2 to 3% in addition on the profit you made on the house. And the state takes it off the top if you're leaving the state because they're afraid you're not going to pay it.
It's insanity. And again, the problem I have is not necessarily the Democrats who raise taxes. It's the people who keep voting for these morons. All right. I got to switch to this last story here. We teased it. Delta Airlines, some very bad news, ladies, especially if you love those Biscoff cookies. Delta announcing they are going to end their in-flight snack service for shorter flights. This starts May 19th. Delta says in a statement the change was made to create a, quote, more consistent experience across the network. Yes, consistently horrible. What do you say to that, Kay?
Yeah, I completely agree. I think the absolute premium that people pay to fly these days, the bare minimum that we deserve for those flights should be those little Biscoff cookies, which are absolutely delicious. Like, anyone who doesn't like them is crazy. And a drink. Like, it's the absolute bare minimum that should come with the flight. Absolute bare minimum. I think this is a really stupid decision by Delta, and I hope they're going to cut prices to make up for the lack of comfort that they're now going to provide on, even though it is just these shorter flights. It doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. Shouldn't be happening.
Yeah, good luck with that. Yeah, I don't think they're going to drop their prices at all. Mary, what does this say about the airline industry?
Listen, flying is like entering the Hunger Games. We all know it. You're going to battle when you get to the airport, right? Just getting to Newark Airport in and of itself is just the beginning of running the gauntlet. And then you got to deal with those really super friendly TSA agents. No offense, I know they have to deal with people, and I would be cranky too if I had to deal with the detritus of humanity that comes through an airport on any given day, right? So they cram you in a seat. They tell you to sit down, shut up, smile, do what we tell you, turn your phone off, don't put your seat back. By the way, you ain't getting anything to eat. So most people bring snacks on the plane with them, but then they're going to complain that there's not going to be snacks because people are pigs and they leave the food in the aisles. It's a terrible thing. I only fly if I have to. That's just the way it is at this point. If it's within driving distance, we drive. I just drive. I don't care if it takes me 2 days. I'm driving. If I have to fly, I will, but otherwise, thank you now. And it used to be a great experience, but people were bad. You know, when you wear your slippers and pajamas on the plane, what kind of service do you expect? So we kind of started this.
All right, welcome back, everybody. This is the Todd Starnes Radio Show. Don't forget, tonight, 5 o'clock Eastern, we do the Todd Starnes Show on Newsmax. We have a very busy show. We'll be breaking down all the big stories happening in our nation's capital. I want to go right away to our Patriot Mobile Newsmaker line and say hello to Indiana Congresswoman Erin Houchin, who joins us. Congresswoman, hope you're doing good today.
Great to be with you.
So a lot of talk about redistricting around the nation. Of course, Indiana, you guys were at the center of that big controversy as well. And I'm just curious, how do you see things playing, and how do you feel about Republicans in some of these southern states playing hardball with the Democrats?
Well, I'll tell you, Todd, that last week's Indiana Republican primary voters sent a very clear message. They expect their elected officials to support President Trump and fight for Republican priorities. There were senators who blocked the redistricting effort in Indiana who paid the price at the ballot box. In 50 years, Todd, only five Republican incumbent senators had lost their race. And on Tuesday, six incumbent senators at least lost their primaries to Trump-backed challengers. Those were the ones who voted against redistricting in Indiana. We're seeing Democrats for years gerrymander states like California and Illinois and the attempts in Virginia. Republicans can't afford to leave seats on the table. They've got to fight back. And, you know, I tell people that the border of this, the battle is bigger than the border of the state of Indiana. This is for the national control of Congress, and we need every Republican seat we can get to continue pushing forward with President Trump's agenda and the agenda that the majority of the American people support.
I know you spent a lot of time back in your district. How are people doing? What What is the mood? What is the vibe? Are people excited about the midterms? Are they sort of not ready to get involved in politics just yet? Where do folks stand?
I would say we saw our primary electorate tick up just a little bit than what I would consider normal for a non-presidential year. People are still naturally concerned about gas prices, which is why I was pleased that Governor Braun is providing some relief at the pump. I'm calling on Congress to also suspend the gas tax. You know, I was one of two senators in Indiana who voted against raising the gas tax. So Governor Braun has since suspended that, giving people relief at the pump. But also, we're working in Congress. We just passed year-round E15 out of the House of Representatives. That will be an ethanol type of fuel that currently is in a 10% formulation in our pumps, but we want it to be 15% to give our corn growers some opportunities. That will reduce the price at the pump between 10 and 30 cents a gallon. So people are concerned about the pocketbook issues, the kitchen table issues, and we're fighting every day to try to give relief, still trying to dig out from a disastrous Biden economy. Unfortunately, when you open the southern border to 20 million people coming across the border illegally, it will wreak havoc on things like rental costs, the cost of health care and public safety, and these other factors that we're still trying to remedy. But we will get the job done.
No, I have no doubt about that. I do think, though, that when you look at gas prices, they were coming down pretty dramatically. And, of course, right back up because of the war in Iran. And I think if the war can be wrapped up soon, I think the prices, and do you think prices are going to go back down at the pump? And otherwise, I think we're going to have some issues with getting Republicans out to vote in the fall.
I know that this doesn't help the situation that people are currently in, but I would note that gas prices are still lower than the highest they were under President Biden. Yes, we need to keep driving those down, and I do think a resolution with the war in Iran will help. But what I want people to understand is that the conflict in Iran and President Trump stepping forward to prevent them from obtaining a nuclear weapon and standing up to the regime for the first time in 47 years, this president said they will never get a nuclear weapon, and he means it. This is an America First posture, because if Iran were able to get a nuclear weapon and that weapon were able to be transported to, let's say, Cuba or Venezuela, we know Iran is operating in Cuba. We know they were operating in Venezuela. That is a severe national security threat to the entire eastern seaboard of the United States. So this makes it a critical piece of his America First agenda, keeping Iran from having a nuclear weapon and neutralizing that threat. And while it's in the Middle East, before it becomes a threat to the homeland, with Iran blocking the Strait of Hormuz, that is a substantial conflict, and it is a it's causing substantial harm to our shipping lanes. That is supposed to be open internationally, and it's not the United States that closed that transit lane. It is Iran. We have to keep the pressure on. I think the president's strategy is working. I think we'll hopefully soon see an end to the conflict and gas prices going down, and I think they'll go down before November. But what I want people to understand is that this is an America first foot forward toward a resolution that does not involve Iran having a nuclear weapon so that they can't be a threat to the United States.
And, you know, I'm glad you brought that up because the president was asked about that a few days ago and the media completely distorted what he was saying because they pulled or lifted out the comment. He said, well, I'm really not concerned about people's economic situations. He said that, but it was within the context of we don't need to have a nuclear cloud over an American city here. So the most pressing issue is making sure that Iran doesn't have those nukes. So, again, you can't trust
the
media.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And I was disappointed in the media's portrayal of that comment. Of course, we hear from constituents who only listen to the media on the left. What I'll say is that what President Trump is concerned with is primarily our national security and public safety first, because if Iran is able to hit the United States through their ties in Cuba and other places that are in close proximity to the United States, gas prices will be the least of our concerns if we're hit with a nuclear weapon. That has to be first and foremost, and then we will obviously naturally be working on driving gas prices down. President Trump had us in the first term energy independent for the first time in 40 years. Joe Biden dialed all of that back. Now we're creeping our way back to energy independence, becoming less reliant on foreign oil as we should be. But what the American people should look for in November is vote. If you're not happy with the current circumstances, try to remember what it was like under President Biden with open borders and high gas prices and high inflation and overburdensome regulations from a big federal government. Think they're much better and freer and more prosperous under President Trump. Stick with us. We certainly don't want to undo all of the good work and success that House Republicans, with the help of President Trump, have led to this point.
I want to pivot, and this is like a hard pivot here, so there's really not a nice segue. You have done something that is, I think, is so admirable. You've introduced the Smart Kids Act, and I'm intrigued by this because I think that excessive screen time is hurting our kids, and I agree with you on that. I also think it's hurting adults, too. But I am so glad to see you addressing this. And I want you to tell our listeners, explain what your Smart Kids Act would do.
Well, thank you for bringing that up. Of course, I'm a parent of three kids that are now 22, 20, and 17. But we were in the height of it during, you know, the cell phone boom, if you will, or the smartphone boom. And the Smart Kids Act directs the Attorney Surgeon General to develop a screen time regulation or screen time recommendations for what is healthy and unhealthy. I think that can certainly be applicable to adults too, but we want the Surgeon General to weigh in so that parents have some guidelines and some information and research to back their perspective when it comes to limiting screen time for their kids. It's too much in the abstract now, and we definitely could use the Surgeon General weighing in on what that should look like from a reasonable perspective. One of the things I tell school groups when I talk to them, particularly middle schoolers, is every time you're doom scrolling and your finger is clicking on that screen to swipe up to the next video, you should be mentally in your head hearing the sound cha-ching, 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 because that is you paying money to the platforms that are benefiting from the amount of time that your eyeballs are on that screen. It's not just kids, it is adults. It's a good reminder to all of us to put down our phones, enjoy the great outdoors and the people that we love.
I like that. All right, Congresswoman, always appreciate your time, and thank you for joining us on the radio show today.
Thank you so much, Todd. Great to be with you.
All right, Congresswoman Erin Houchin, everybody, from the great state of Indiana. This has sort of like been Indiana week here on the show. We had the governor, we had Marlon Stutzman on, so anyway, good stuff there. All right, we've got to take a quick break here, folks. 901-260-5926. You know, I am curious. Do you, moms and dads, grandmas and grandpas, or even young people, do you watch And do you keep track of how much time that you spend on your phones, on the computer? And if you have kids, are you monitoring what they are doing and how much time? And I'm just curious to know if moms and dads are literally putting together programs like, okay, you can only be on the, I don't know, what, Dylan, what's a fair number, like an hour of iPhone time?
Like per day?
Per day.
Maybe like 4 hours.
4 hours? They got to do homework.
Okay, never mind. Let me backtrack. I'm an adult now. I'm not in school. Okay, hour. Yeah, sure, hour.
I was going to go with 20 minutes.
Wow. You're strict.
I'd be a strict parent. Guy. Yeah, I'd be a strict parent. Go outside. Don't come back till the streetlights are on.
Well, my kids aren't having iPhones, so I don't know.
Oh, really?
Not until it's time to have an iPhone.
I wonder what is that age that you should give your kid an iPhone?
That's a good question. We should ask someone that knows, that's a parent right now.
I'm thinking 18.
Yeah, sure.
Seriously.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't see anything good coming out of having kids on the iPhones.
Their brains need to be more developed than not.
Well, in that case, 26, but okay. Yeah.
26. I shouldn't have an iPhone right now.
I am curious. All right. 901-260-5926, our number. That's 901-260-5926. Yeah, I wouldn't give my kid one until they're 18. That's, in all seriousness, that's crazy out there. We'll be right back. All right, the great Ben Ferguson joining us on our Newsmax show to talk about these out-of-control gas prices. Let's take a listen to Ferguson. Ben, this is exactly what the Democrats have been doing to Republicans for decades.
Yeah, for decades. And then when they actually get caught trying to make it even worse, and Republicans are like, all right, if this is the game we're going to play, then let's play the game. Then all of a sudden they're freaking out, losing their minds, and upset that someone like a Todd Starnes or a Ben Ferguson or a Brent Taylor could get elected from Memphis, Tennessee, for example. That's the irony of all of this, is that there's areas that they deliberately have drew only for a Democrat to win, only for even, you could argue, a minority to win, and then it stays there forever. And then when they redraw a map where it's like, all right, well, this looks more fair and we'll just see what happens, they're like, you can't do that anymore. Play stupid games, win stupid prizes. I love that this has happened. I agree. There is a bigger question, a bigger conversation about gerrymandering. But let's also be clear, Todd. The next issue for me is beyond where we are now, and that is this. How much overrepresentation is there in places like California, because they have counted illegal immigrants in the census data, and then when they do the maps, they look at these maps and they have overrepresentation, meaning too many congresspeople from the state of California. I'm ready to go there next. Let's make this thing as fair as we possibly can. Illinois is another example. New York's another example. You look at Democrats, and they've been cheating for years by counting people that aren't American citizens and therefore getting more representation in Congress. It's time we fight back there. Now, I'm sorry. Gloves are off. Let's go.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a street fight. We got to talk, though, about gas prices. Midterm election coming up. Yeah. We know what James Carville said back during his lucid years. It's the economy, stupid. Turns out, I mean, he's right. It really is. Right. You've got in Memphis, I had to go fill up the Cadillac this weekend, Ben, and I had to do a double
take. I knew you had a bougie car, but that's next level. I just got to give you a golf clap on that Cadillac there. I'm not letting that slide by like that. Keep going.
$4.69 a gallon. I can't afford to put that much gas in my Cadillac. Come on. How concerned are you? These gas prices, if they keep going up, could be a problem.
Yeah, they've got to get down. They've got to get down significantly before the midterms, or this will be a disaster for the Republicans. I know that. You know that. The problem is we're fighting still over things like E15 and regulations, and we're still fighting over subsidies and corn, and we're fighting over these alternative fuels when we need to get rid of all that. We need to protect small refineries in this country. There's some Republicans are trying to screw them this week, and they try to do it in the farm bill. They're trying to do it again in Congress, which is insane that we'd be fighting over small refineries we desperately need producing right now, not having to produce ethanol at these small refineries, and yet they're doing dumb games like this. Republicans need to understand right now, we need everybody producing, small refineries, big refineries, and the president understands this. The president, by the way, has said we need to leave small refineries alone. But this is what Republicans are fighting over, trying to get subsidies and farm subsidies for people that are growing corn. That is not the time to be doing this or changing it right now. And the second thing I think is even more important than that, Todd, is this. If the president can take away and have a quick, do away with the federal taxes that he's collecting on gas right now, we've mentioned this from the White House. The president's talked about this, maybe having a moratorium during these summer months. That would be a brilliant move by the president. I think it's worthy of this. It's something that needs to be done, but we've got to get him down long before election day. Otherwise, we're in trouble.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Real quick here, the New York Times added again, they've got an article bashing people who don't believe in climate change. Why are everyday Americans called deniers simply for questioning a government mandate here?
Yeah, look, this goes back to the Democratic Party, and it's a religion to them. The Green New Deal is a religion. This mandate that you and I must drive a greener alternative, fuel car, that we must not have stoves that burn gasoline anymore. Again, it's totally insane. Natural gas. This is the Democratic Party. They will never let this go because they're really Marxist, socialists, and communists masquerading as Democrats. They're completely irrational. The New York Times is out there pushing this propaganda agenda. And if you go back and look at their own words, go back and look at Al Gore, I'm pretty sure we should all be underwater right now or dead, and yet we're not underwater and we're not dead. So when you do the sky is falling for 25 years and Chicken Little and it doesn't happen, you become white noise. And the Democratic Party has become white noise on this. The New York Times is white noise on it as well. So I hope they stick to this incompetency because it only helps. It makes it easier for us to get elected as well. And I like that.
I do too. And we always appreciate Ben Ferguson hanging out with us. By the way, folks, again, head over during the upcoming break here to your favorite bookstore, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, Amazon, and pre-order a copy of my brand new book called The Golden Age, How Trump Saved America. The book will be launched, will be in bookstores later this summer, but we're trying to get as many advanced orders as possible. And I really think you guys have been doing such a terrific job, and the numbers are looking very, very solid. But we need as many of you as humanly possible to go and pre-order today at your favorite bookstore. By the way, ToddStearns.com, we ask you to buy the books, but everything else that we do is free. And that includes our free podcast, all 3 hours of the radio show. And also our newsletter that comes out a couple of times a week. We don't want to inundate your inboxes, but we want to make sure that you've got great, important information. And we send that to you free of charge. And you can find all of those resources at ToddStearns.com. All right, folks, we'll see you tonight, 5 o'clock on Newsmax. Tomorrow, noon o'clock, right back here on the radio. Be good, everybody.